Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You're listening to the This Life podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky and me, Mike Catherwood.
That's right. We're doing it this time. So check it out. Thanks for listening.
You live.
Extra special, You Live This Life with Theo Von. At Theo Von, if you can follow him. Find him on YouTube. Of course, this past weekend is the podcast. Our producer is setting up our Facebook page as we speak. Theo, man, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Dr. Drew.
We were having a great conversation off the air, so we wanted to get this thing rolling quick.
Yeah.
About the guy that used to pay you guys when you were, was this back in Louisiana? Or?
Yeah, this is back in Louisiana, one of the big, 50 states, really. I think we're still in. I don't know how many there still are, but we were in it at one time. And they had, this dude used to give us 20, 30 bucks, this dude, Mr. Patrick, and he would make us look at his butthole, but from about, it's not that funny, Mike.
It's art, Mike.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying. Let me finish, though.
Okay. Yeah.
From about 50 or 60 feet away.
No harm, no foul.
I mean, it does make it a little bit more subtle. There's not
like what is that? Is that pedophilia? What is it?
It is. It's a version of that. But what I find fascinating is I can't explain it.
Right.
I can't. I mean, what is motivating that? Think about that.
And when you say he made you,
he paid him,
dude. At $30, that makes me do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's my threshold.
It beats selling hamsters.
Oh yeah, and this is 1980. And a lot. This is 90. 94, when a lot of the hamster game had really dried up.
You know his hamster gig, right?
I do. I am well aware.
Yeah. But yeah, now what is that? What makes a guy do that? I remember this dude, he'd give us 20, 30 bucks. He'd walk off about 50 feet.
I have no idea.
And hold his butt open a little bit. And you had to, here was the thing. Then as long as he made sure you were looking, you were good.
So essentially, I'm gonna make a
theory.
Did
he look through his legs? Like when he spread
his
butt?
No, he would look
then...
around, dude. He's okay. Not a creep,
He's not an animal.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I'd look at my asshole when I used to bleach it.
Really?
I would go through my legs.
Oh my God.
You do the bleaching?
Now, that's more deviant to me.
It is a bit, I gotta say.
I wouldn't have done it. I had it paid for, and we did it on the air.
But you know what it has something to do with? It's kind of the same thing that Louis C.K. got dinged for, which is this sort of this exhibitionism,
uh-huh.
Right? And some people have this pathological exhibitionism, and it's a problem. It's not a good thing. You know what I mean? When people need to – it's a way of exerting control over other people. It's a way of sort of –
like flashing almost? You think it's like a flasher?
It's in that zone. It's that stuff. And there's a narcissism with it.
In a way, isn't there certain comedic performers that might fall into the same category? Obviously not as deviant, but the idea
showing
that...
your asshole?
No, the idea that...
Well, Theo Von comes to mind.
I will do so much more.
I don't
do
like
so
mine.
Much more.
I used to like it.
If people watch me. If people choose to watch,
well, isn't
I'll
that
do,
interesting?
I'll they, go to such an extent.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's a good thought.
I mean, like...
And so in a way, comedy is
like our friend Steve-O. I mean, he'll be the first to admit. I mean, he's not going to sit around and puncture a hole in his neck for fun and then go using himself as bait for sharks.
That's a good point.
But if people promise to watch and they film it.
So it's all a kind of pathological exhibitionism, but becomes sexualized for some guys. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And yet musicians don't really do that.
No, because they can fuck whenever they want.
That's, I think, right. I think that's exactly right. Does that make sense? Well, you're a comedian. Does it feel like a sort of an exhibitionistic act?
Yeah, I guess it's like, I wish I could make myself as entertaining when I'm just by myself. So there's something about an audience that does that makes it actually even want to occur within me. Because, if I'm by myself, I'm not like, shoot, I should do some jokes right now and really, cheer myself up. Which you would think I would do because it's an ability that I'm able to do. But it's only that audience that brings it out. That's really interesting.
Well, tell people about this past weekend. What's happening there?
This past weekend is a podcast. It's every week. And it just is me talking about my weekend. We do two a week now.
Okay,
where we have a guest. And we just had Chris Hansen on, Christopher Hansen's. And he was the pedophile, man. He used to meet all those pedophiles for lunch and then surprise them with the police.
And you mentioned that he broke them down into three categories. Why don't you tell them about that?
Yeah, because he broke them down into three categories. He said that a lot of them are young people that are lonely. They get stuck into the internet.
So some sort of, and I would argue they're almost like, that's kind of a weird kind of a sex addiction, because sex addicts will go for more and more and more sort of risky kinds of behaviors.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, and I think probably all three of us had known that guy that starts getting into – he could get girls on his own. He was charismatic, handsome maybe, but then he started resorting to hookers. Then it started two or three, yes, and then you're like, why are you
that's,
even –
That's that version. Right. Right. Yeah. That's that version. This is the loser version, a guy who's lonely and cannot find people.
Right.
Number two was
– The number two was guys that really do have – a sexual aversion to young kids, right? There's something sexual attraction. Yeah,
they may not be a full on pedophile. They're probably reenacting their own sexual traumas, that kind of thing. And then the third category,
just people that are just there's depraved. Just the deep, yeah, the dark arts.
The dark arts. Is your tour still called the Dark Arts Tour?
Yeah, Dark Arts Tour. It is.
We're gonna learn about sexual depravity and.
No, I'm not doing nothing. I mean, I'm telling people that man used to pay us $20, sometimes $30, even around the holidays, actually.
Yeah, just to
see his butthole from about 40 feet, though, 50 feet.
And so you stopped doing that when? Let's say he's like
when
Tuesday.
He quit paying? Yeah, I think he was getting workman's comp for something. And when he healed up, we didn't get the money.
God.
Man, when that money was flowing, boy, we was looking.
Sure you were. Did he have was it a reasonably nice butthole?
Bro, at 50 feet, I don't know what it was, yeah. Dude. He could have been hiding, just putting a milk dud on his
what
butt.
What if in 1994 he says, I want you to look at my butt, but now it's got to be 15 feet?
And it's $1,500.
Well, $1,500, Drew.
Can Howie Mandel host this?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
$1,500, Drew, I'm licking his ass.
Don't look. This sounds like a game Howie would actually would
deal or no deal.
Yeah, I wouldn't ever touch it, but I would look. I would say the closest I would get probably 12 feet before I would start to feel alarmed, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to have a dog with me.
How's your own mental health doing? Everything cool?
In my own, you know what I just started trying to do is quit smoking. That for me became, oh man.
What age did you start?
I don't know. I was dating a girl and she smokes.
Approximately.
And she smoked, yeah.
Approximately how old?
She was 34. I'm 38.
No. Oh, you just started smoking?
Oh, no. I'd smoked a little bit on and off my whole life, just having a cigarette every now and then.
How old when you first exposed?
Oh, probably 13 or something.
And did you use much across your teen years?
Not too much.
Okay.
Occasional. But recently when I quit doing drugs and alcohol, I was just – I wanted something. I wanted to act out.
I see. So you had more cigarettes.
So I had more cigarettes.
Yeah. I would be wary of too, like, sexually too. I mean, I found like my friends
sexual acting out
new to recovery. Yeah. If you're already established in life, you know, you already have a career and a life, and you have the ability to date and get chicks, and especially if you're an entertainer like yourself and a good one, I would be so concerned that would be what I'd turn to is my
and gambling is the other thing.
Gambling, yeah.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
See, I never gambled even when I was using. I never liked gambling even when I was using.
You know the Bob Forrest story, right? I mean, I had him. Yeah. I had him employed as a program director, and he'd always was leaving work early on Friday. We're like, dude, Tornay was going to the track.
Oh.
And he had no idea that was, part of his problem. He didn't even think about it. He's a guy 5 years into recovery.
Horses or dogs?
Horses.
Yeah. Anybody betting on dogs, fuck them, dude.
Yeah, that's
I had a guy lost $1,100 on a Bichon running a race in France once, and I'm like, dude, you got a problem.
You definitely have a
Bichon.
Bichon. You bet online. Yeah. I'm like, you've been had, bro. I'm like, you've basically, you just got paid to look at somebody's butthole from about 40 feet away.
No, that was definitely butthole peeping.
But yeah, and dude, I've never had anything in my life been as gripping and as makes me feel as much shame and just as cigarettes, man. For me.
Really?
I can't
enjoy
it.
You feel like
it.
You should have control over it and you don't?
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard, man. That is, the cravings are intense. They say, the research suggests that the first 2 weeks is the toughest time, which is why they advocate using gum and lozenges and patches during that 2 weeks. And there's a medication that about 30% of the time really takes the cravings away.
Yeah.
You could try it.
Yeah, I might try some new things. I'm on day four today.
Oh, good for you. Oh,
yeah.
Dude.
And I've been using, honestly, I've just been honestly asking God to help me with it. And I know, I'm not, devoutly religious, but just been asking. I think some of it is just giving up.
Control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surrendering.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Surrender. Yeah, surrender is a super powerful process that people don't understand.
Yeah.
Real surrender.
Right.
I mean, you can think you're surrendering, but when you really surrender, that's a heavy-duty thing.
Yeah, I mean, just saying, look, there's going to be times throughout the day where I need help with this, man, and I need help. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't, because I've tried. I mean, mm-hmm. day after day, I'm not going to do this, and I'll do it, Mm-hmm. And then I feel so much shame because it's like, man, I'm not strong enough to control myself.
Do you have someone you can call when you get close to the edge like that?
Yeah, I do. The problem is then when I get to those moments where I should.
You don't want to call.
I don't want to.
You want to use. Yeah, by the time you maybe a couple steps before.
Yeah.
Call.
Yeah, I need to start incorporating some new things, and I think right now I'm being a little bit brave enough in some of my ways to do it, to try and do some different things, man, some contrary action. And
I've found too, though. I mean, this was my experience with sponsors early on, is that if I can bottle it up, and I know this is patently wrong in how I would handle it, but something about reaching out made the shame worse.
If I could keep it private. You have a big dose of that, right?
Yeah, but if I could keep it private, at least that it was something that I can.
It's interesting that something about reaching out makes the shame worse. Yeah, I don't think that I have that, but that is, I could imagine having that.
Right.
And that
I
would
can
be,
imagine too, because it's embarrassing, it's shameful. Yeah. But you know the opposite is going to happen when you contact that person. Yeah. You got to have that faith. So in a weird way, your faith was off, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's powerful, man. It's interesting learning about yourself and trying to figure out some of the stuff and, you know, being contrary action.
Do you look at your youth any differently now? You continue to grow and recovery and stuff? Because you've had a lot of thoughts. I'm fascinated by how you look at a lot of things that you grew up around. You know, I've always asked you questions about that because I'm interested in your perceptions. And, you know, people that have been in certain situations in life and found their way out have very clear ideas about things and how things can be done to help people that are still back there.
Yeah.
Right? And I wonder if that changes us all as you have changed.
Yeah, I think, you know, I look at kids, I see kids being, I look at children a little bit differently. I look at the power, kids are pretty powerful. You don't really realize if they have to create their own worlds, how powerful they can be and then how locked in there they can really be.
Mm. Wow, that's, I had not thought about that. Tell me a little more about that.
Just like, you know, I realized when I was a kid, like I started, you know, I was ashamed of where I lived. So I started biking to school and I would bike to school and it was like 5 miles, you know. Yeah. And at the time, it didn't seem like anything to me. It was like, this is what I need to do.
Because you're so motivated.
Yeah, to make my world seem okay so kids don't see me get off of, like, the poor bus, and then they don't have this judgment against me, and I'm able to, like, you know, whatever it was, like, stay out of whatever shame I needed to, or whatever, you know. And just, and when I look back on that, I'm kind of fascinated that I was able to do that. Not that I was, just that a young kid was able to be like, okay, I'm going to bike this, you know, I'm going to have my book bag on my back, and it's not really the safest route, and it's going down a highway, and you're like... Okay.
How about the fact that your parents let you do that?
Yeah. And my mom had to work. She didn't even know, you know, like she probably didn't even know, you know, and, but then also not being mad at her about it. She was just trying to, you know,
live.
Yeah. Keep everything going. You start to just like, man, it's just a lot for some of these families.
Remind people again the story, your older dad and stuff.
Yeah. My dad was 70 when I was born. My dad was a senior citizen.
Holy mackerel.
You didn't know this?
My grandfather was born in 1880, bro. My grandfather.
His father.
Yeah. We had one drawing of him at our house.
Done by an Indian.
No pictures.
By a Native American.
We had drawing and a frame description. We had a frame description of my grandfather on the wall.
Wow. Where, still all Louisiana? Everyone in the...
My father was from Nicaragua. My mother was from Illinois. But yeah.
How did they end up in Louisiana?
I don't know, man. Somebody fucked on a boat. That's not even a...
Oh.
You know,
yeah.
That's not a land animal. You don't make a land animal with that. I'm Polish Nicaraguan. You know,
that's a weird combo.
Yeah, that's a boat baby.
That's a barge baby.
I was gonna say, but
that is a barge.
That's a tough fella, though.
That's a good call.
That's a tough fella. That's a lot of good genes. You know, if you wanted to be like a fighter or something. I mean, that's
yeah. Well, apparently, I'm just fighting my own mental health.
Well, so your relationship with him was sort of good, right? Right?
Yeah, we got along good. It was just. You know, he was just dying. I remember
he was just dying. That's all, Mike. It just,
yeah.
He was,
well, that, there's that.
He was just old dying.
Oh, my brother would come in the room. He'd be like, "Dad's dead." Like, you fucking is he? And I'd run in there, and he wouldn't be dead, right? So then it got to like this. He'd come in, he'd be like, "Dad's dead." He'd be like, "You remember Dad?" I'd be like, "Yeah, I fucking remember Dad." He'd be like, "Oh, he's dead."
How old is your brother?
I don't know. 2 years older than me. I don't even know. I don't know how old either one of us was ever. And I still don't. We're still always going to be 11 and 9. We would start fighting. My mom would come home, and we were fighting because my dad wasn't dead.
Like
basically.
Physically fighting?
Yes, fist fighting because my dad wasn't dead. What's wrong? Dad's not dead. Fucking said he was dead, and I go in there, and he's just napping, and now he's pissed that I woke him up. So just
what would mom say to that?
She'd probably beat our ass for fighting.
But there's got to be a weird sense of, I don't want to say abandonment, but this feeling of, you probably had a way different view of mortality than other kids. Just like you growing up with a continuously or consistently sick parent.
Yeah,
you get because you probably did think to yourself, like, my dad could go. And by the time you were 17, I mean, your dad was 87 years old.
Yeah.
You probably had a much different view of mortality and how fleeting life could be.
How old were you when he died?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I was 16. Mm. And I remember being ashamed. I remember, and I feel pretty bad. I remember, like, one of the last times I saw him, he was at a dinner with a lady that he was dating, his girlfriend. He'd ended up seeing this woman for, like, about 8 years, and she was a great lady. And I saw them at a restaurant, and I had a girlfriend. I was, like, 14. And we didn't live together at the time, and I saw them in a restaurant, and I introduced him as my grandfather to the girl, but at such a verbal level where I knew my dad wouldn't be able to, like, make out of what I was saying, you know? And I guess I felt – yeah, I guess I was pretty ashamed.
Well, you had a lot of shame growing up, shame of the poor, shame of the dad, and did your parents ever marry?
Yeah, they were married, and then they had four kids, you know, and then they got divorced when I was, like, seven.
What are your siblings doing now?
What's going on? My brother's doing great. I got a sister that's not doing real well. She's, you know, suffers from drug and alcohol abuse. Uh-oh. And then I got another sister that's a nurse, actually.
Oh, nice. Interesting. So one's an addict, one's a codependent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. And then my brother's been through recovery, and he's done extremely well. And he's so versed. He does a lot of stuff with helping kids, and he's so versed in communication with children. Like, he's fascinated by it. Hmm. I think he'll make some really good books or someone. He's so... I've never met anybody as adept as, like, the word you use, the exact word, and how it can affect, like, you know, your communication with the kid and stuff. And he loves it. He does it because he wants to, you know, be able to, like, better communicate with his own kids and help other people do the same. And it's good, man. So now, you know, I'm kind of grateful some of the stuff because I feel like some of our family has, like, platforms where we'll be able to influence some sort of positivity or, you know.
Now, like, one of the things you always were pretty outspoken about was – government intervention for people who are struggling that you felt it sort of kept them dependent.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of circles where you get stuck. You get that excuse culture. You know, we grew up around a lot of it, you know. And I think you saw more of it with black families when I was growing up because they were more impoverished, you know.
Yeah.
There's no black wealth. When I was growing up, black wealth was you saw the people on Coming to America, whoever those actors were, and the Dallas Cowboys. Those are the only rich black people in America.
Yeah.
You know, Jesse Jackson, I guess.
Right.
But so, yeah, you saw a lot more like excuse culture, like people living off the government. Like we had, you know, I had friends, they had a family member, they would make him mentally handicapped or legally keep him at home, a dummy check to get the dummy check. We talked about that before.
Yes.
So you get a check from the
you
government.
You used the
R
word last
kids.
Time we described it.
Mentally retarded?
Yes.
Yeah.
The check.
Yeah. Maybe they used to call it that, I think. Man.
Well, they did. Absolutely. It's still, I mean, look, it's still used medically. I mean,
no, but they would literally have a kid.
I understand. We were talking about the use of the word, though.
The R word. Yeah.
Oh, retarded. It's coming back a little bit. Dude, I have two friends that are retarded. They don't care if you use it.
Yeah.
You know who uses it? People that aren't retarded.
Yes.
And it's like, do they get a say in it? They're not
even
retarded.
Well,
it's
like Brad Williams and midget.
Yeah.
Brad Williams, a dwarf, and he uses the word midget all the time. And he's angry that he can't use it.
Yeah. That's funny.
It's strange, though, like that idea of shame, like becoming good at shame as you grow up.
An interesting thought, too.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Becoming good at it.
Yeah, you're good at shame.
Yeah.
You were good at it. You were good at sort of managing it, accommodating it, being it.
You know what? That's a lot. I guess it's funny because I never thought that a lot of what I was managing, for some reason, I just felt a lot of shame. I don't even think I blamed it on anybody. I just felt a cloud of it.
Well, you probably blamed yourself.
You blame yourself.
Yeah.
And you're an addict. That's part and parcel,
yeah,
you know?
And then you probably get addicted to it a little bit. And that can be one of the things as you get older, not staying addicted to the shame and staying in that world.
Gives you good reason to be angry and to act out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it probably had a lot to do with you being so funny because that was a great coping mechanism, I would imagine.
Let's talk about that for a second because I've never talked about this, Theo. What do you think comedians – is there a common carry in terms of the mental health or – shame, anger.
There's an egomaniacalness. There's definitely a lot of ego in it.
In comedy. Yeah, but I mean, yes, you're standing up at a mic by yourself and talking. I mean, that's just
right.
Everybody
nature.
Look at me.
Yeah. But I don't.
But you earn it.
Yeah.
You earn it. It's not as if
ego is the right word. Is that the right word?
Maybe ego isn't. But I don't like it when people say, "Oh, you make so many people laugh." Like you do it for other people. I do get joy out of seeing people be happy. Like if I see a father son come to the event, maybe I just get joy about seeing a father son together. You know, or a family if they come out and they all had a good time and they really did. Like that makes me feel really good, you know? But I'm not up there thinking a lot of times.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, but that, again, you're getting back to something. You're placing blame on yourself, like you're doing something wrong. Does LeBron James sit around and go like, "Oh, well, I'm doing this for the people"? No, he does it because he's fucking excellent at it.
But he found his
skill in life, and he harnessed it. And you found your skill set, and you worked to polish it to its best.
But I think
ability.
He's onto something. I think let me tell you an image I'm having right now.
Okay,
which is. Ralphie May, God rest him. I miss him so much. I saw him once at the – I've told this story before – at the – what's the big shrine? The Shrine Auditorium.
Full.
Completely full. Had people laugh the entire room. This was 5,500 people or something. Mm-hmm. It's giant. Everybody gasping for air. And I remember looking out. I was way over on the wing, looking at the audience, and these – it was like waves of humanity were like going – and he was like – I imagined him as like somewhat of a conductor standing in front of this extraordinary wave. And I brought it up with him because he's on Love Line the next night. And I went, "Dude, I've never seen anything like that." He goes – and he was very humble about it. He goes, "That's power, dude. That's power, right?" Mm. And so maybe it's more power than ego, I wonder. Is it some sort of bid to –
A control.
To empower yourself in some way and control, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I think I was thinking about this a little bit. You know, I think when I was young, my mother never really laughed, you know, and I always, and just recently I started realizing, like, you know, my mom laughed. We were talking about something recently, and my mom was laughing on the phone. And I was like, man, I don't know if I'd ever remember my mother laughing, you know, like right. I think there was something when I was young, I wanted to make my mother laugh, like, and I couldn't, you know, or something, or I wanted my mother to feel okay. My mother was never okay. You know, she always felt bad. She was always working hard, and she had her own issues.
Were you entertaining her a lot to try to make her feel better?
We would do stuff. I remember. Yeah. It would be like at night, like, we'd put on like little performances for her in her room, like orchestrate these little deals.
You and your brother or the sisters too?
The whole siblings, everybody. Anybody that was getting involved, you know? And yeah, I think I just wanted to make her feel good and make her laugh. And so, you know.
So it is kind of an empowerment. It's getting control over her misery.
Yes. Yeah. I think in some way. And I haven't done a lot of work on it. But there was something, and it made me feel okay when people are laughing, they couldn't not like you, you know.
Right.
So you were, for that moment, you were kind of okay. And I felt just so scared. It was like a power. It was like a, it was my only little superpower, you know, or like.
Yeah.
It was like my strength. Like I couldn't physically be strong, or I didn't know if I could, and so.
But it's something extraordinary too, and I always feel like, we talked about with this with D'Elia on Loveline a long time ago, and it's like
he's pretty fascinating.
He's a fascinating guy.
I don't know him very well. I mean, I know him, but I don't know him.
We were talking about it, and this idea that comics themselves look at it as this negative thing about this egomaniacal idea that I'm going to consume everybody's attention. But the reality is, it's like you have an exceptional talent that very few people have.
I don't see it as any more egomaniacal than anybody, any more so than anybody standing up and singing.
Right.
I don't
see
it any different.
Well, it's because it's your own ideas. And you're talking, you're essentially talking something that you created. You know, I know that people write songs, but at the same time, like, people, for the most part, myself included, have an easy time looking at a performance of song as artwork, and I'm observing art. Stand up, you still, even though you're not, you're getting someone being themselves.
Yeah,
in front
you're putting
of
yourself
me.
In the light.
You know what I've just thought of, even just listening to. You almost have to. You're creating a world, kind of.
Yeah.
Because you need a world where you can feel okay, and whatever. Goes on in that thing, whatever the jokes or this or that, or like you're saying, Ralph, it's like this comfortable, it's almost like you need this comfortable wave, you know, almost a sound wave or an acceptance wave or what, a communication wave where that's a world you feel comfortable in. Because it really is, man, when I think about it, when the night goes good and they'll just let me be and people won't act out in the crowd and be a jerk or somebody yelling or anything – I know it's going to be a comfortable wave you know, for 50 minutes that everybody's going to have fun in.
Because you know how to do that.
Because I know how to do that, yeah. And it takes, yeah, it just takes me, you know, 12 years to feel okay for an hour. You know, I think that's kind of what it is, you know, in a weird way, but not in a bad way, but it, yeah, it's such a control thing. I don't know, man, this is interesting. You know, but yeah, I mean, it makes me grateful that dude paid me $40 to look at his butthole.
It does, absolutely.
Nothing's ever been as fun, huh?
Well, bro,
now you can do it for 50 minutes.
Certainly, right? Nothing is profitable.
Anything on Facebook? Anything coming up there from our producer?
Dude, I can tell you
what
they had, dude. So when I was growing up, you know, we grew up across a river from a rest area.
A rest area, like. Like where you pull off the road and rest?
And people weren't resting, really. A lot of people
doing drugs.
Yeah, doing drugs by the river.
Gay sex?
Oh, it was some of that, but it was also drug-induced homosexuality.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's a deeper realm of homosexuality. Anybody can be homosexual.
Yeah.
But not everybody can do it on drugs, you know? And so you'd see people back there doing drugs. Well, anyway, on our side of the river, they had these two dudes. One time me and my buddy went down there, and these two guys were over there. They had this potato. They had these potatoes and one of those big slingshots.
Yeah.
And if drug-induced homosexuality was occurring, they'd fire a tot over at
them. Potato gun.
Yeah. Not a gun. A gun.
Slingshot. Slingshot.
Yeah, because gun is a little bit more... You know, you're
advanced.
Aiming.
Yeah.
Gun is somebody could get hurt. But you know, you fucking hum a fucking yam at somebody from 200 yards off. And they had binoculars. And it wasn't if men were gay men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
somebody's trading drugs for sex.
Yeah. Or people that were so high on drugs that they then were engaging in.
What is it about a river that makes humanity behave differently?
It's something about,
a river.
Train tracks and riverbeds.
Right?
Yeah. It's the ability to escape. I think that, yeah, that in a moment's notice, you could be gone and it could all disappear.
It's like robbing a bank near a freeway. It's like, yeah. You just get that easy access.
That's Theo's version. But I believe like there's a difference between a western river and a southeastern river.
Yeah.
Some about
the
Mississippi, a little more stately.
Oh, yeah.
Those are stately acts.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, rivers in the south, too, some of them, they'll go down and they'll come right back up. So you could think you're escaping and then you're passing just right by the other windows on the house. You know, you're like, fuck. We forgot about this bin.
This oxbow.
Yeah, we forgot about this oxbow.
Oh, but
it was funny because people would be like, oh, well, they don't like gay people. That wasn't it. They didn't have any issue with gay people. They had an issue.
Extreme drug behavior.
Extreme drug behavior because they were like, well, then you
These
could
guys
be,
will thank us one day.
Yeah, you could be putting disease in our town, right? This could be two businessmen clouded by some dope, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't want to take this home to their family. I mean, who knows?
What was the drug of choice down there in those days?
Oh, I don't even know. We weren't allowed to have it. For me, it was Tootsie Rolls, man. I was young, you know?
What age are we talking?
I'd put a bag of rolls in. I put 40 fucking Tootsie Rolls into my mouth, son, one at a time.
I would think meth would be the drug.
Meth,
there,
yeah.
I'm trying to think. Time. We saw, yeah, I bet probably there was probably some early meth,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It was the first meth wave.
Yeah.
We're in the second meth wave now.
Yeah.
No, I was.
You were part of the first
heavy
wave.
In the first meth wave.
Were you really?
Southern California, that was in the late 90s.
It's back, man. It's
back. Yeah, I bet.
Go look, all the homeless people, their bikes apart beside their tents.
Oh,
what do you think that is?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I took apart my friend's TV because I was positive that Conan O'Brien was talking to me.
Damn.
I took it apart piece by piece. And I don't know what I thought I would achieve by taking apart his TV. Like, I could get into Conan O'Brien.
Get a hold of Conan.
But, man.
Prove your point.
Conan, found a toolbox.
Tell him. Yeah. Tell him you're talking to me.
Found a toolbox.
Wow.
Dismantled it. And this is, you know, late 90s, so it wasn't like flat screen. This was like a big box.
Damn.
That I.
But that's pretty exceptional, man. These young meth heads, they couldn't even do that.
No. They can't even drive manual.
They can't even.
No, well, millennial meth. Millennial
yeah, they
meth
can't even drive manual.
Millennial meths.
But you know what's getting big now, I'm noticing, is, and it's just people are doing mushrooms just on a regular daily
basis.
Well,
they're doing LSD on a regular basis, and now psilocybin is stepping into that.
Yeah.
So Mike and I were talking about this earlier on a different podcast, but that the public has gotten ahead of medical science in the use of chemicals.
Yeah.
And so we don't have the research to recommend or even to tell you what is or is not okay because we don't have the research yet. But what people are doing is microdosing LSD, microdosing psilocybin, LSD for end of life stuff. They're trying to use LSD for mood things. They're all over the place. Ketamine for mood, and
that's what I want to get on.
Ketamine
is the medically regulated ketamine.
Yeah, that sounds like a safe zone.
No, it's three. These do these infusions of ketamine. Theo's up for that.
Yeah,
and you have like three or five treatments under anesthesia, essentially.
Really?
Yeah, you would be a candidate for it.
Yeah,
I could see you going to the academy. You seem like a guy that would do some, and also maybe coach a basketball team or something, a Latino team.
No, you know, had a great response to that with Dave Navarro.
That's who got me into it.
Yeah. He's fascinating. His mother got murdered on the street that I live on.
What?
Greenfield, yeah.
I thought it was in Arizona or something where she got married. Got murdered.
No. She might have been murdered in Arizona.
No, I think it was out here.
It was out here. Yeah. I didn't know
that. Y'all live on Greenfield, she got murdered like $3. Sorry, I mean, you guys brought him up.
No, he has a documentary about it.
Fascinating, dude.
He seems fascinating.
Was
there
a setting Rising Sun? And
sober Dave is the nicest guy.
Oh my God, the nicest guy
on the planet. Yeah. He is.
And the most interesting guy, too. Yeah. I just did his podcast. He has a radio show on
Dark Matter.
Dark Matter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had some friends that tried to, that shot a pilot with him, and it was about him going around to like these dark worlds that people are in, like mm-hmm. Where people bring pints of their own blood and they drink them, at like a bar, and then like other, like, you know, and he said he was a sex addict too. I would always hear, he has some real, and I mean, he's kind of that ambidextrous kind of sexual deviant,
He was on the show. We love him.
Oh, he seems fascinating. I'd love to meet that man.
So we need to take a little break, and then we're going to answer some questions.
All right, we'll take a little break. Right back.
Let's talk about CBD. It's pretty much everywhere today, and it's a topic that I get asked about a lot. My bottom line on CBD, although there are way more claims than clinical evidence right now, many people are using it and reporting great results, and that is very, very encouraging. I want to first define exactly what I'm talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana, CBD is the non-psychoactive component of hemp. It's also what's responsible for the calming or relaxing effects many people experience, not the high. Now, about the products. There are a ton of products on the market today. Forgetting the vast array of reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, not on hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that sound way too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are very compelling, and I'm pretty excited to see how things develop as science catches up with this booming industry. So, if you're ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That's drdrew.com/SELECT. For a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with code DRDREW. That's code Dr. Drew.
If you or someone you know is dealing with addiction, someone you love, finding treatment is difficult. It's very frustrating. It is a minefield out there. And the truth is, every patient's needs are different and evolving. People behind True Recovery in Orange County, California, realize that effective care is not one size fits all. That's why they have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all facets of this disease. True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads. They personally manage your case, allowing them to personalize the care. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient, and always with an eye on a holistic approach and a focus on accountability. And as patients become ready, this is a key part of what True Recovery offers. They offer assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support and aftercare. I've spoken with the medical director at True Recovery, and I was impressed with the range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. Their experienced team is well equipped to manage patients at all levels of care. To request information how True Recovery can provide you the personalized care you need, go to drdrew.com/true. Again, that is drdrew.com/TRUE. And we are back. And what do you got from Facebook?
Well, there was a guy from the previous show when we were talking Swole Patrol, but mostly health questions. His name's Rick, and he wants to know I'm not sure if this is really how he asked it before, but he said, what is incomplete about the 12-step programs?
Incomplete?
Yeah, and what are some assumptions they make about the individual? Thanks, I'm 6 months sober as well.
That's kind of a vague question.
I know, that's a tough one.
What I will say, though, is that don't mistake... Recovery is about trying to regain a flourishing life in a world without drugs and alcohol. It's about not using drugs and alcohol. But for some people, a lot of people, particularly people with bad addiction, they need other kinds of treatment on top of 12-step. So it's incomplete in the sense that there can be a complete and thorough recovery of mood and sense of self and emotional regulation. Sometimes trauma therapies, sometimes interpersonal therapies. I always think emotionally focused therapies are very good for addicts, alcoholics. Takes time.
Yeah.
Takes time. But the recovery is the core. If you don't do the recovery, you can't do the other stuff.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't do it. It just doesn't work. Now, incomplete recoveries, like people want to be on medication-assisted treatments and they want to just not do it, okay, that's fine. I'm not interested in that. That's not why I got into the field. I got in the field because I saw people go from dying to, holy shit, amazing people,
yeah.
And I wanted to be able to help people do that. And that was pretty extraordinary for me just to see that happen.
Yeah, I guess, especially, yeah, I mean, you've probably seen AA do things that medicine is unable to do.
Oh, 100%. It's worse than that. I was.
That's fascinating to be able to witness that, you know,
absolutely.
And that real perspective. Oh,
Let me listen to this. So I'm an internist, right? So I'm doing medical, and I was dealing with their detoxes and stuff, and I was spending all my time on the drug unit because that's where all the medical problems were. And I'm like, what's this 12-step stuff? Silly, this goofy stuff. Those 12-step on the wall. And this treatment room, what are they doing in there? Is that nonsense? I'm getting them off drugs. I'm doing it. And then I saw a couple of patients who I sort of stuck with across the course of treatment because they had various problems. Start to blow. I was like, oh my God, what's happening to these people? What is going on here? I couldn't believe it. And then they come back 4 months later and 6 months later. I'm like, holy shit, this is a changed person. You don't get to do that in medicine almost anywhere.
Wow.
You kind of go from acutely ill to chronically ill.
Yeah.
This was a young, healthy person dying.
Bob Forrest being
amazing. And Bob Forrest, we have the footage up on our website right now where I found Bob Forrest after 10 years on this Bill Nye thing.
Wow.
I know. It was so weird. We were talking about it. The next day I was cleaning the garage and I found the tape. It just like popped out of nowhere. So I put it on the website. It's hysterical.
Yeah,
watch that.
Yeah, well, it's not that exciting, but
but it's interesting to see him, I bet.
But well, he talks about it all the time. He's like, when I saw Bob, I thought he was dead, and there
Bob
he was.
Still looks a little dead sometimes.
Yeah, but you didn't see him when he was dead.
Jeez.
Imagine him looking like he has AIDS or he's
toothless.
On heroin and toothless.
He got new teeth. He looks great.
I could see that those teeth are new. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's crazy.
They have that luster.
I would never.
He didn't have the new ones when you saw him.
He just got them.
I would never think that, though.
Yeah, and so I just told everybody, this man is dead. There's no way he can survive this. We got to all just accept that and just got to get rid of him. We can't be around this because we're enabling this death, and it's going to happen no matter what we do. And I just cut him out, and 10 years later, 12 years later, whatever it was, 15 years later,
yeah.
He resurfaced when I was doing this thing with Bill Nye.
Bill Nye's the science guy.
And he was in this audience.
Yeah. Show that never made it, of course.
And he was in this audience.
It was good.
And I was giving a lecture about drug addiction, and this guy looked like Bob Forrest, kept asking me these great questions, like, Jesus Christ, the whole time I'm thinking, fuck, that guy's dead. How could it can't be Bob Forrest, because
yeah.
That guy's dead.
Bob Forrest is dead.
And he came up to me afterwards, and he goes, hey, you know, we knew each other one time. I was like, oh, I almost had a heart attack.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing. But then we got to know each other, and I watched him work, and I stole him, brought him to my program.
Wow.
Because, first of all, I thought anybody that recovered from that kind of addiction, I'm already interested. Because he was.
So was that fascinating, huh, to you?
He was that far gone. He
Damn.
Was goner. And to see him now flourishing and being insightful and sort of
understanding. He's a family now?
Oh, yeah.
I think.
He has a couple of little kids.
Yeah. But that's that's amazing to think
amazing.
That, you know, when you're looking for drugs and then to think that years later.
He was
you know,
homeless on the street and living in MacArthur Park. He was the guy that people.
Nice park.
He'd come and knock on your door and people would pretend they weren't home.
Hiding.
Oh,
yeah.
He was that guy.
We knew some of those people.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, it is fascinating. It really is. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why I go to the meeting sometimes. It's just, it's like, it's the one place that I've found where there's a possibility. Like you could witness a miracle. You can hear about
frequently.
Yeah,
and that's the stuff. That's what interested me. And so these sort of half measures that people are taking to get to prevent from dying, doing opiates or whatever. Okay, I'm okay with that. I'm just not interested in it. I'm not the kind of work I want to do.
Yeah.
So,
Ashley had this question when you guys were talking about you know being a comedian and
please.
And she was comparing that. Comedians would be the same as musicians as far as...
See, I was saying they're different.
Yeah.
They're different. Because you don't hear what Theo was saying from musicians so much. Different. But even though it's the same thing, It's
well, you can have trauma and be a musician. You can have trauma and be a comedian. And
well, you can have trauma and be a pilot. You can have trauma and be
I would think there is something about being a trauma survivor that makes you want to be in front of people, I think. There's something about that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's something. I'm not saying everybody with trauma has that, but there's something about it. And I think it has something to do with that when you're traumatized, you're so in need of being of closeness, and you can't get there because you've had that ruptured by trauma.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the crowd sort of substitutes for that a bit, I think.
You ever see people?
That's pretty fascinating. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to be connected sometimes, and it's like my arms that are like inside of my soul just aren't long enough to touch.
Yeah.
Whatever else is like kind of a normal like. Plane or something.
I get it.
It's bizarre sometimes. It's like you can almost feel it, you know?
Yeah, I had emotional abuse too when I was growing up, and so I can, you know, feel and understand and relate to those kinds of exactly what you're describing.
Yeah.
That's why you're such a narcissist.
Let's get into that. And that can be.
Go ahead, and on that note,
go ahead,
I'm just
gentlemen.
Kidding.
Go ahead.
I'm just
he's
kidding.
A fascinating narcissist. Look, if he is, he hides it pretty well
no,
at
he's
times,
super smart.
I think.
Well, I think I'm what
he's
they call,
very smart.
I think I'm what they call a closet narcissist in the sense that some
you're gay.
I could see that.
No, is that some people, you still have the narcissistic injury, but your focus is other people.
Oh, that's good.
And so it looks like not, but there's still some elements of it.
Yeah.
Now, thank God I've had enough therapy that it's not really operating that much, mm-hmm. but I could see how that would have been a thing.
Oh, it's interesting you're able to think about that kind of stuff and see it. Yeah, I think and then the saddest part for me then is it's like if you go to your childhood, you go to those types of things, and then it's like you end up taking like to your parents where probably some of that, you know, came from. And then, when I talk to my mom, she has whatever happened to her. It's like it's just this.
It's an intergenerational thing,
and it just makes me sad. It's like, man, I just want to go back in time and like wherever something stuck. You know, like you just want to get to the root.
You were talking a few minutes ago about the black families. Imagine what they've been transmitting.
Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah. And so, you know, we talk about intergenerational transmission of trauma. We got to get deeper and more honest as a culture talking about that.
100%. And that's some of the thing that makes me mad. It's like. You know, it's like you can't talk sometimes. Like you can't include race. You can't include gender. Just to even have a conversation.
Yep.
You know, the ability to have a conversation in this country or at a high level.
Yep.
And people don't want to have it. A lot of people, they start making money. They want to stay with the money. They don't even want to, you know, admit like, you know, like that we all are, you know, really kind of the same and really struggling with a lot of the same stuff.
Same stuff. It's very unfortunately, because it is so common, it is so much the same stuff. The liability of it is a lot of envy and aggression and then mob action, and that's what's going on Twitter right now.
Yeah.
So if all this mob stuff going on.
Oh, Twitter's insane.
And that's really where I think the big problem is right now, because that's the most unhealthy manifestation of all this.
Yeah.
You think there's a similarity, Drew? I was thinking about how Theo said he wants the connection, but like the souls, arms of his soul aren't long
enough. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a great image.
I feel.
Do you have the same thing?
But only sexually.
Hmm.
Like, I want to be able to have intimacy and develop this connection, but I can't. Like,
the reason that you're stumping me a little bit is that most people that have that then can only experience it sexually.
No,
because
that is
the way to get over it into a connection.
I can't connect with people. I enjoy
sex. You're the flip side of it.
And I want but I only want it for my own needs.
I don't think
Are
you having what he has?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have that exact thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only want it for my own need. It's like, it's like I only want it for my own needs.
I loved the idea of really connecting with a woman and having like shared intimacy, but it's just not happening.
It's like it's almost like somebody's born without a leg, you know?
Yeah, it's a handicap. It's a handicap is the word. But you can get over with emotionally focused therapies. I'm telling you, EFT works. Is your wife aware of that disconnect?
Yeah. Oh, she's aware, dude.
Does she complain about
it? Texting about it every week, you know? tonight or not.
No, but is she complaining about it or is it just feel it?
She doesn't complain about it because she knows that won't help, but she.
That's nice of her.
We work on it.
In therapy?
Together, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a chance. I was seeing a girl, and the therapist was like, you know, you have to practice these things. You have to, like, lay together naked. Because, like, I can, you know, be sexual with a girl that I don't care about.
Oh, exactly. That's a different thing.
No, I'm the same way, though.
Okay, that's a different thing. Okay, yeah.
But
that's the good-bad split in your
It bothers me to have sex with my wife because I know that
Soiling her.
Well, no, I'm using her like a fuck doll, which is what I, you know, as opposed to I should be. And it's like, I've seen it happen time and time again, where if I have one night, tawdry one night stands, everything's fine because I know that's exactly what it's for and it's serving its purpose and I can deal with that. It's that when I know I'm in a relationship with someone that I love or should, there's this block where I don't want to treat them like I know I'm about to treat them.
Right.
So I'm aversive to sex in any
but
way.
But it's an internal split. It's like anybody that I love that would have sex with me, something's wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't. They're being bad with me because that's the bad part of me.
Dude, that's how I feel. I feel almost like I am like it's illegal. Like if I want to engage in sex with like a girlfriend.
Yeah. So you have to have a bad person to do that with.
Right. Or just a girl that knows the game, that this is a one time thing.
You can let her. That can be a bad person then. Mm.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. You say it like that. Yeah. I feel.
I'm using this word
bad. No, that's how I feel. Yeah. I feel like. Yeah, it almost makes this feeling in my throat like it's like I'm this is gross.
That's an anxiety. That's called globus. That feeling. It's
is it
globus? It's actually got a name. Yeah.
Wow.
It's got like a fist in your neck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is also a sex move.
Globus.
Which
is strangely the guy who used to show the asshole to Theo called it globus. Let's do globus for 30 bucks.
Mr. Patrick. Let's don't call him guy.
A woman named Noelle. I think it's a woman. Said fear of intimacy and getting too close to someone out of fear of loving someone and fear of possible dealing with the pain of losing them.
Yeah. So that's a typical move, which is that's different than what you guys are describing a little bit, which is a little more on the women's side than on the men that experience this kind of thing, which is what that person does who just asked that question will sabotage relationships to be sure that they don't ever have to lose somebody. So rather than get in and risk the possibility of loss, they'll just push them away or they'll do something to screw the relationship up.
Is that more of a male or a female trait?
More of a female trait.
Wow. Yeah. That doesn't sound like what I'm describing.
No, you're describing something
but
different.
But you know what it reminds me of? You know what it reminds me of, Drew? Like, talking to girls that are like 25 that only date 60-year-old guys or 55-year-old guys.
They don't have to be close to
them. Where they're like purposely setting themselves up in a situation where they know there's no future.
Yeah, the guy's going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Courtney Stodden is one of those people maybe. Or I don't know what happened to her actually.
Yeah. Geez,
was she on your thing?
She was on Life Changers back years ago, but that's a name you would not have not come up in 10 years, right?
Yeah, she just Instagrammed me the other day.
What?
And said
she's the one that everyone claimed had breast implants, but she didn't.
Well, she married that senior citizen.
Yep.
I think, since my dad was old, every time somebody fucks a senior citizen, they come to me.
See, he was that's funny.
That guy was 200.
Wait, which guy was?
It was like Milton Berle or somebody. It was like a dang.
He was like 55 or something, right?
Karl Marx. Who was it? I mean, this guy. I don't know any celebrity.
Groucho Marx.
This guy was old, though. Yeah.
What? Doug is his name, right? Wasn't his name Doug something?
Yeah, I think, maybe. Doug.
Courtney.
But before that, didn't she marry, wasn't she famous for marrying an old man? I met Doug. Doug wasn't that old.
Right.
He was old.
Like middle-aged.
But he's middle-aged,
Oh, she had somebody else for that. And the mom,
for you guys.
And I remember the mom was all signed off on everything. She was like, fully into it.
Oh, yeah, dude, million-dollar baby, dude.
God, I've not thought of them.
Hillary
so
Swank should play her in a movie.
I sat on a plane and first class, I was, I don't ever fly first class, but ABC was paying for it, so.
I love that.
It was right after Dancing with the Stars, I flew to
GMA.
To Good Morning America the New York stuff, right? So they fly you first class and everything. I'm in the first class cabin with my dancing partner and nobody else but Hillary Swank and two giant dogs, like German shepherds. She had two of them.
Oh, wow.
And she just was traveling in first class with two gigantic.
Did they each have their own seat?
No, they were on the floor and they perfectly behaved the whole time. They didn't make a peep.
She needs dog support.
I guess, but not only dog. You think like dog support, it's like a Bichon. She had two fucking murder dogs. Crazy. Two German shepherds, yeah.
Well, maybe they're safety.
Maybe they're killers. Yeah.
It was good security.
That's cool, dude. I sat next to Eddie Money one time. And he sang that song. Do you know what it is?
It's Two Tickets to Paradise.
Yeah. And he said he used to huff gas all the time. And time he hit some gas so hard, one of his legs shut down. and it hasn't started back up. That's what he said. And we looked a little bit alike. And then he showed me semi-nude pictures of his wife. I was like, this is fucking awesome.
I got stuck.
Where can I find her? Oh, no, that's Jesse's girl. I kept
Rick
singing
Rick Springfield. Damn, he must have loved that.
And I think it wasn't
that's
that cool.
That's why he started showing you pictures.
He shut you up.
There's always somebody funky. In the
Mark
the,
McGrath always see in first class every single flight I'm on. I think he's on every. I think
McGrath
he's just on
is still
flight.
Flying first class. Good for him.
I think he's just on every flight.
I love Mark. I love.
Oh, he's
Mark.
Now sweet, a federal marshal. Yeah.
He's such a sweet guy.
He's the nicest dude.
Smart is, guy, man. Nice guy.
He is, man.
Yeah. He's come out the other end because there was a. He'll admit there was a time and a place like when Sugar Ray was writing number one hits where he probably wasn't the easiest guy to get along with.
And I never had a problem with him ever.
Speaking of Sugar Ray, I sat next to Sugar Ray Leonard, and Kris Jenner was behind me, and they chatted the whole way as she got drunker and drunker. And I was sick, and I had to go to sleep. But
I did Dancing with the Stars.
He was so sweet.
I did Dancing with the Stars with Sugar Ray. He was the nicest guy. Yeah. He was the nicest dude on the planet.
But I had a bad runny nose, and I couldn't talk to him.
He's one of the reasons why I dance so poorly.
Like a Dr. Drew's wife song.
He's one of the reasons why I dance so poorly. Because really? I spent so much time talking to him about old fights and
so
not
sweet.
Rehearsing.
That's funny. Oh,
I ran into him again, and I told him I was that woman that was sitting next to you on the plane with the runny nose. Because at the end of the flight, I said,
he's like,
no.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
I remember
so
you had the runny nose. Oh, yeah.
He goes, yeah, you need to take some vitamins. I was like,
oh. Yeah,
all right,
sure.
Anything else on Facebook? Anybody
oh,
else?
How can I convince my
Black
dad?
Black people have the wildest solutions to stuff.
This is Kimberly. How can I convince my dad to go to AA? He thinks it's all about willpower. He's 65, never been sober for a long period of time. He went from alcohol pills and back to alcohol.
Okay, for her, she should go to
Al-Anon.
She should go to Al-Anon. He will do whatever he does.
Yeah.
And hopefully he won't suffer too much in the meantime. So what's coming forward with you? What's going on? What are you doing?
What's
what are you
going
forward
on?
To?
Everything's going okay, man. You know, work stuff. We got
I
a pilot.
I want to do the podcast again. I love that podcast.
Yeah, I want to. Maybe we'll come here and do one to make it easy on you. You know?
I'll come out there. I don't care.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. You know what? I like being in this environment better. I don't like my environment. I'm realizing.
I like
really?
Your environment.
Oh,
really?
I'm so happy you like our couch.
Yeah, this is kind of fun.
You're out in the same studio as Spider and the Kid, right?
Right next door.
Yeah. We're starting a new podcast called King and the Sting. Me and one of those guys.
Really?
Yeah. So that'll be kind of
King
interesting.
And, the Sting.
And it's like user generated where fans submit things. It's like King It or Sting It. And we, like, you know, say how we feel.
Can I talk about my thing with Tom?
Yeah. Tom Segura?
We're going to announce it tonight anyway.
Yeah. So I'm going to start something with Tom Segura where he wants me to do. He's got a whole new thing.
Yeah,
coming
yeah, yeah. I've heard about
and,
that.
Got a new platform.
And he's going to be sending me downstream comedians to talk to.
Wow.
And so you might be on that show too.
Yeah, it's going
to
be.
I'd love to come in there.
Because Christina is this. She keeps talking about how comedians are all on the dark side, the dark side, the dark side.
Yeah.
And we're going to explore that.
It's going to be called What Would Dr. Drew Do?
Maybe it'll be called The Dark Side.
That's a great question.
The Dark Side.
Dark Matter.
He'd probably go to the gym and get some eye drops. I have a feeling.
That's Dr. Drew's solution.
Yeah, I really
those are my two solutions. Eat
some meat.
Eat some steak.
Eat some meat. Yeah. Pump some iron.
Yes, that's some of the, that's the same, who is, Jordan Peterson is a steak guy.
That's right. Did you interview him?
Yeah, he came
I
on.
I'm so jealous. I'm dying to talk to him. I was a Jordan.
You, it'd be a great conversation.
I know that. And
you know,
and
I just talked to him with Jason.
What?
Yeah, last Friday. A week
would you,
ago.
With Jason.
Somebody give us his
oh,
phone
yeah.
Number.
I got to go on Jason's podcast again. I haven't been in there in a while.
E-bomb.
We had all on a Friday, all three show up, and it'd be fun.
Oh, that's a show.
Yeah, I know. But I was a fan of his long before the public learned about him. Because I'm always looking for a way to combine anthropology, psychology, and medicine. And he was doing that in his Maps of Meaning series.
Mm.
And I found them about 8 months before he blew up, and I was like really getting into it. I was like, I gotta get a hold of this guy, and then all of a sudden, poof, he got into the whole political thing.
Yeah,
and
he got politicized. Yeah, he. I don't even. I guess he did and did. I mean, he's just
he got. What happened was,
See, what had happened was
was he got involved. The government in Canada had this sort of kangaroo court in his particular province that put something into law. Essentially, that if you didn't call somebody by their preferred gender pronoun, you were guilty of a hate crime.
Right.
So he was saying this is mandated speech, and mandated speech is the road to the Gulag archipelagos, which is the Russian thing. And he just did this YouTube thing one night, like at 2 a.m. He was pissed and did it. Next day, the whole thing exploded, and he almost lost his job as a professor.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was like hanging out with a textbook. It was literally like you had to go meet your teacher finally at the end for 5 minutes of the semester.
Yeah.
And it was like that, but for 2 hours. It was like
I know his shit inside and out because I was deeply studying.
Oh, it would
before.
Be great then hear you
Let's
talk.
Let's book him.
Yeah, I've been trying. I've been, Gary's been trying to get over the
really?
Dr. Drew podcast.
He would love to come. He was just I know he just did Rogan again. He's he was
busy.
In town. He's
oh,
very I'll busy.
Listen
though.
To that. That his Rogan his, the last Rogan podcast was one of his best interviews ever.
Yeah,
but I'll listen to this new one.
I need to go back and listen. To
new
it.
One's good. You just I was listening a little bit on the way over here.
Dude, the one with Jake the Snake is good. If you had Jake the Snake on, you
no,
go
I don't know Jake the Snake.
Jake the Snake Roberts, a former WWE star. He's a fascinating dude.
Why?
He suffered from tons of addiction, and he's very – now he's better. He got better through yoga.
Yeah.
And but I'm just always, listening to him is –
I'm always suspicious of better through fill in the blank.
No, I believe he went
and
to –
And recovery. He,
he was in right. recovery.
Okay.
But
he used it as a as
he
an
physically –
because
he was on top of being a desperate drug addict. He yeah. was – he his body was all fucked
yeah,
up
yeah,
from
yeah.
wrestling.
Then I'm in. I'm
and
in. I'm all back.
Diamond Dallas Page actually – helped him like he took him in literally let him live
literally
in his place
gave him a halfway house of his own
took him to meetings
I'm all,
and stuff
I'm
like
all back. I'm all back
but
he used to hide drugs in the snake bag and he would check the snake bag because he had a fucking he's the only wrestler that had to carry around a, like a 60-pound snake so he's like can you imagine every day you have a snake in a pillowcase
scared shitless they don't want to go
yeah
the gym,
well, I forgot who it was like, I think it was Hacksaw Jim Duggan someone pulled a gun on him one of the other wrestlers because he's like get the fucking snake away from me like don't you even bring it near me.
And you can imagine he probably put more and more and more drugs in there with the snake, right?
Oh, I'm
it
sure.
probably got pretty crazy.
He said the snake would have pneumonia all the time. And, like, he said a couple times he left a snake at a diner on accident. He would just be fucked up and just left, you know? All but right. he is so, like, just trans. He's so just right on. It's like laying on the concrete just on the street. It's like you're right there with the. He's just right there.
He'll take
real.
It there still, yeah.
Yeah. He's so yeah. real. He can't yeah. even help it.
So that's another virtue of recovery that I like, which is he has to be that way to stay sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to be that present, that real, or else yeah. he'll drift.
I've always been curious.
You know what I'm saying?
He needs that. Yes. Yeah. It's almost like yeah. that's – yeah, that keeps it alive in him.
His recovery alive.
Dude, it's the same thing. When I – if I feel like doing drugs or if I'm thinking about it, if I talk with a friend about drugs and we laugh about a crazy night we had – the desire completely goes
away. Well,
that's
good because some people it goes the other way.
Oh, jeez.
When that kind of thing, right?
Well, yeah. I'm curious about your recovery because, and this is a testament to you, that you chose to get clean at a time when your life was really doing well. You know, most.
Yeah, but I knew him then. You were unhappy.
Yeah, I think I've yeah. always been kind of unhappy, and I just want to be happier.
Yeah, he was just curious why he was so fucking unhappy, and why couldn't he be happier? And he just started asking questions, really, as I remember.
Yeah, I guess that was some of it. And then I just went to a meeting, and I was like, oh, they're doing this, and people were saying stuff that made me feel. I was like, I just wanted to feel. I was just like stuck in a world where I wasn't feeling anything, and I was lonely, I think. I don't know.
Loneliness is the worst experience, like piece of – as far as like the biggest torture to a human –
yeah.
The soul, I think, is loneliness.
Humans are by nature social.
Yeah.
And Aristotle. You don't notice that it's – you don't notice sometimes that you're even lonely.
Well, you don't notice that you're so cut off.
Right.
Because you're so used to it and you're still with people, but you're cut off.
And yeah. that's one of the fallacies of the internet is you feel connected, but you are not.
You are not.
Yeah.
And it's happening to everyone how we're just – and then we're just a lot of struggling.
I know? Got getting back to the how I wish I could have a connection with a female, but I can't.
Your anniversary is tonight. We got to get you out of here.
Is it really?
Speaking
yeah,
of that,
6 years.
Speaking of
wow.
that,
Mike's handsome too, dude.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
you,
much
sir.
Straight. I don't know what have you heard,
yeah.
but I
don't know. I hear you like to stare at buttholes.
I may have to shoot a potato at you too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. Let's shut it down, man. We'll shut it down. We'll keep it classy. What do you have planned for the? Tell us about the evening, Mike.
We're
going
to go to the restaurant where we had our wedding reception at.
Oh,
and,
Santa Monica,
yeah, we're gonna.
What year is it?
6.
Wow.
That's great.
And then we do a little beach picnic with the daughter, you know, because we live out in the west side in Venice. And
oh, nice, man. I'm on west side, too. We should hang out sometime. I know.
Yes, sir.
We probably said this, but we will do it.
Let's do it.
I need to.
Let's go to some meetings, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you were about to ask somebody to interview.
Well, it's I'm so lucky. I really, really count my blessings that because of that, because of my inability to really have a connection but needing sex – like the tawdry disposable stuff, I'm so glad that I got married before Tinder came about.
Yeah.
Because I would have just been awash in my own jizz. Just like, I could have thrown everything away. I would have used that. I would have told myself, oh, I'm still in recovery because I'm not using drugs and alcohol, but I have 7 dates lined up this week and
sure.
I'm going to fuck every girl and I'm not going to talk to her ever again.
Yeah.
You know?
Ooh, that would empty your soul pretty quick.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It gets empty. It's amazing your soul will have a bottom at some point. It's kind of fascinating.
Your soul has a bottom?
Even your soul kind of runs out. Your soul's like, ah, I got nothing left for you.
Most people don't experience that. It's addicts that take it there.
I feel lucky that I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, the addicts have to take it there to get better.
And people always ask me about like my rock bottom or that moment, you know, and I explain it and they're like, okay. You know, it sounds so.
He had 15 cardiac arrests, 37 seizures, multiple ambulance transports, guns pulled on you, cats shot your, you know. And nothing.
No, it didn't matter. Like Theo said, my soul just kind of ran out of room. At one point, I was in a hotel in Inglewood smoking rocks, and I was by myself. And I, for no reason whatsoever, I wasn't going to get arrested that night. I wasn't on my way to court.
Was his custom.
I just walked over to the phone and dialed up a recovery center. It was like literally, like you said, my soul kind of just ran out of room. It couldn't deal with it anymore. And I was like, well, this is my moment.
So we got to wrap this thing up with that. Our collective souls have run out of steam here.
Let me just say, I mean this. I'm not just saying that to blow smoke. The funniest man working today, Theo Vaughn.
I was at an Ice House event where the owner of the Ice House stepped up and said, "This is." He put you in the same category as like Robin Williams and
a lot of dead Steve
and our fans love you. Yeah. You had the highest rated show this year.
So really? I've seen.
That's awesome.
Anyone can go on in the main room at the comedy, at the Improv or the Ice House, and have a juice crowd in your headlining, and then of course you watch them kill. Everyone's there for them. I watched Theo murder a at the Sycamore Lounge with seven people there. The place is dead.
What's
and Theo comes up.
And just, what's a Sycamore Lounge?
I think you came
what's
to see
that place
me.
Upstairs?
It's a halfway house. It also sounds like a halfway house.
It is. I mean, there's
a bar downstairs.
I've watched Theo light up a place that was dead. You know, like he's the one of the most talented, funniest people out there working today. Absolutely
super
true.
Funny.
Do you have a tour coming up or a tour we can check?
Thanks, man. I do have some dates coming up in March at the Borgata and at the Wilbur Theater in Boston and Atlantic City. And then there's some other Omaha I'm going to be in coming up. Everything else I think is selling pretty good. But those are some, January, February, March.
Where's the Wilbur in Boston? Why does it sound so familiar?
I don't even know.
I think it's a pretty well-established.
I think you did the Wilbur.
That's what I think.
You
did a thing with Adam Carolla there.
Yeah.
But thank you guys. That's sweet of you guys, man.
Absolutely, man.
Every time I think part of me wanted to come over here because I just feel, I don't know. Every time I leave here, I feel a little bit more connected or I just feel like.
I know. Thanks for calling and asking to be on the show. It warms my heart.
It makes her year.
No, I mean, I want the best guest of the year to want to come back, but you were only here for like 2 minutes, too.
Yeah, and I want to come back. I'd come back probably once a month, if we just set it up.
I'll come back to your thing. Let me do yours.
Or do it here if you want.
Oh, and we're going to start doing a thing at the Ice House because those are good people over there.
Yeah, let's go do it.
They are.
I'll come. It's right here.
Yeah.
I'll come over there anytime you want. Are you going to interview people on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe we should do something over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep talking about it, too, that we should just do a live podcast. Yeah. I've done them there with Corolla. They sell out fast.
You've done it there with me.
Yeah. I've done it with you. He and I have done them. Yeah, we've done them together.
Dude, I think of something maybe like a bi-monthly thing, and we go over there and do something right there.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. Especially if you're going to be interviewing like people that are dealing with addiction and stuff like that, talking about that kind of stuff.
Well, Pacine has a very rich recovery history.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is where, what's his name, died? Pistol Pete Maravich, you know?
That's right. Well, a lot of the original, he's a famous basketball player. A lot of the original old school alcoholics are from this town. Oh, wow.
This is the town where I got cleaned, and I went to the greatest, supposedly the greatest recovery centers in the world, and I got clean here, back where
there's like old school guys from the Kennedy's era government stuff. I treated Betty Ford's best friend.
No way.
Yeah, a lot of that. Whitey Ford? This woman and all recovering, all Pasadenians. They all ended up back here, and they all had these rich recovery communities and stuff that have been here forever. And some of them are names like DuPont and Gamble, and I don't even know who the names are, but
I went to school with some DuPonts.
Yeah, but names like
Toaster.
Like, Toaster, yeah, toaster oven.
No, but I mean,
like a troll, like people. I don't remember the names, but people whose names that you are associated with, you know, Johnson and Johnson, things like that. You know, and then government officials.
Ronald Computer,
Mr. Computer, Jim IBM.
All right, here's the problem. I could talk to you all day.
Me too.
We
got
to wrap this thing up. He's got to go do his.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys, man. I love you guys.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for being here. We'll see you all next time. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.